Now, there's an interesting survey. The Patient and Client Council, they've been looking at waiting times for your healthcare, and the story of Northern Ireland is being told. Maeve Hulley is the person who is obviously the chief executive of the Patient and Client Council. Maeve, good morning.
Good morning, Frank.
The reality of life on a waiting list, what have you found?
So, we did this report in an attempt really to try and get behind the waiting times. We hear all the time that waiting times are getting worse, but we wanted to try and understand what it was like for people who were actually waiting for a protracted period of time for their care, and we found a very sad picture. We heard about people whose mental ill health deteriorated, people who felt socially isolated because they were in such pain that they had stopped going out and socializing with their friends. We heard of people who had lost income because they couldn't go to work because they were in pain and they were losing their jobs. So really, it was an attempt to try and get behind the statistics and remember that behind every waiting time, there's a patient, a family, a life that sometimes is in quite distress while they wait for care.
Now, I know your council are thanking all the people who shared their experiences. Some stories are hard to tell, but is there any light at the end of the tunnel? We don't have a government. We don't have the changes in the health service that many people believe are needed. Is there any hope?
Well, one of the reasons that we did this work was really to try and get some improvement, some change. The first thing that people told us was they wanted the waiting times to be reduced. And the next thing they told us was that they wanted better communication. Sometimes people see a consultant and they're told they'll go on a waiting list, and then they don't hear anything from the hospital. And they begin to wonder if they've been forgotten about or what's happening. So we were really hoping that as a result of this work, we could get things improved so people would know how to keep in contact with the hospital to find out where they were in the waiting times, but also to try and get better information for people on a regular basis. And already we have had a really positive response from people who provide the services and the Department of Health around trying to make some positive changes so we can make that communication better with people.
Yeah, a lot of it's down to communication, the honest conversations, the ongoing communication, the regular updating, the better use of technology to improve communication. But does any of that actually help you be more healthy?
Well, I think it does a number of things. I think it helps you to make decisions. It helps you to plan. And it helps you to be in more control. Part of what people told us was the frustration of not knowing, the frustration of maybe hearing that somebody else who they knew were on a waiting list had their operation before they did. Well, what was that about? Why was that happening? So it was really about trying to make sure that information, although often it is the situation changes, but at least if people had some information about how long they could realistically be expected to wait, then they could start to make some decisions around their lives in the knowledge of that information. At the minute, the information is really very scant. Sometimes people are told they'll wait for 6 months, but actually 6 months comes and goes and they haven't heard anything from the hospital. And that's when people start to think, have I been lost in the system?
And are there guidelines for most ailments, or is there only guidelines and, I suppose, rules for cancer or serious illness?
So there are targets for waiting to get an outpatient appointment. So that happens, you've been to your GP and your GP says, I think you need to see somebody in the hospital. So you go on a waiting list for an outpatient. There's also waiting list targets for diagnostics. So when you have your scan or when you have your test, waiting to hear results for that. And then there are the ones that probably we hear most about, which are the waiting times for surgery. So there are a number of waiting times, and what we
but they're only targets. There's no rules.
There's no targets.
But they are targets. There's no rules.
There's no rules. There are targets, and the targets are where people would like to be in terms of we would like this is the amount of time we would like to get this many people through the system. What we're hoping as a result of this work is that people will be able to go on and have a look, hopefully fairly easily, maybe electronically, at where their specialty. So if you're waiting for, I don't know, say, knee replacement, that you can see what the waiting times for the knee replacements are, so you can start to gauge yourself where you are on that system. It's not in place of trying to get the waiting times down, because that is a priority and must remain a priority. But while the work is going on to get waiting times reduced, it's about keeping people plugged in so they understand what's happening and they know what they can expect in terms of their own healthcare.
Okay, Maeve Holly, thank you very much indeed. How long have you been waiting? You can let us know. You know the number, 02890 333 105. Let me speak to John, who's in the line. Good morning, John.
Morning, Frank.
How long have you been waiting, John?
I was actually at my GP yesterday, and I've been waiting. The initial letter went through the normal hospital. It's actually a year. And I phoned the hospital there this morning, and they said it can take up to anything to 86 weeks.
And how long have you been waiting to date?
It's a year, sort of a year.
So you're 52 weeks behind you, and you might have another 30 or so to wait.
Yeah.
You know, John, I don't want to pry into your health, but is this something that is causing you inconvenience? Is it something that's difficult for you? You can tell me what it is if you wish, or is it something that is a serious concern about the longevity of your life?
It's actually a surprise, says Frank, I have on my face.
So it is something that they don't see as a major priority, but it is a serious priority to you.
Yeah, it's because I get paranoid about it, Frank. Some days it's okay, and other days it's like a spot, it's like a big boil on your face.
It's uncomfortable, and something that you don't like having to put up with.
Yeah, very much so, Frank, yeah.
And is the option there, John, to go privately and get that sorted at a cost?
Yes, Frank. And actually phoned the Belfast Skin Clinic there about a fortnight ago, and the initial consultation was £180.
And how much would it be to actually get the issue resolved?
I don't know. That was just to go in and see a specialist and look at it, £180, and then obviously the surgery or whatever would be, I don't know.
Are you almost afraid to ask because you're concerned about how much it might be? Is it something that you wouldn't be able to afford?
Well, frankly, for the consultation.
And that has to be
Frank, you know. So.
Yeah, sorry, I thought you had the consultation, but you didn't even the consultation.
No, Frank, you can't afford it.
Yeah, and that reminds us of, you know, the horror of the NHS as it is, because when you were a younger man paying your taxes, you expected when you had this facial problem that the NHS would have been there for you.
Yeah, very much so, Frank, yeah.
Well, I do hope you get it resolved, John, and I... You know, 86 weeks is a long time. There's another 30 or so to go. Let's hope that you will eventually get that call during the run of this year and get the issue resolved. But thanks for the call, John. Thank you.
Okay, no, Frank.
Thank you. It's a prime example, isn't it? You know, it's not life-threatening, but it is so difficult for someone who's got a facial disfigurement and they're worried about, you know, how they look and how they feel and concerned about the actual ailment itself. But there's no one there to sort it for them, unless they have money. If they have money, of course, if he's got a couple of hundred quid, he can have a consultation. And then if another couple of thousand quid, he could have the operation done. Good morning to you. 90 333 105.
Mike's got a point about something that we were touching on earlier in the programme. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning. How are you, Frank?
Very well, sir. What's on your mind?
Well, you were speaking earlier on about waiting lists. And I have been waiting for an ENT appointment to deal with my encroaching deafness and my increasing tinnitus. And I was put on the list on the 14th of September 2016. I heard nothing until June of 2017, when I complained via my local MLA, and I got a letter back saying, "The concerns you have raised have been investigated and have been provided with the following details. That the referral was originally received on the 14th of September, blah, blah, blah. Demand on the ENT service is greater than the available capacity, and currently the waiting time is 89 weeks. I have still not heard anything, and I complained again yesterday. By my counting, I've now been waiting 122 weeks.
That is a long time, and it's such an annoying condition, tinnitus.
Well, it is. is, but it's not just my condition, it's everybody's condition. Transforming your care, absolutely marvellous. The day after that they said that they were going to temporarily close A&E at the city hospital, the contractors moved in and gutted the department out, knowing full well that it was never going to open again. This is the state of the Northern Ireland Health and Social Care Service. Yesterday, I took my wife to A&E. We sat for 10 hours, and we were fortunate that she got a bed. Much more fortunate than the two ladies to her side who had been sat in a chair inside A&E, being provided with two meals over that period of time of 26 hours.
Gee. It's like third world.
It is third world. And I'll have to tell you here and now that the staff themselves were working their fingers to the bone. I've no complaint about them whatsoever. But it's those politicians up in the hill who are sat back getting their salaries and doing nothing about it. And it's about time that lady over in Westminster got a minister in to sort our health system out.
Mike, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but would you say our politicians are next to useless?
Not next to useless, they are useless.
When you sit for 26 hours in A&E, I'm not surprised you would say that, or you see someone else sit for that length of time, and you are on the receiving end of a service that you expect, which is pathetic, and at the same time, you quite rightly praise the hard-working staff who are just stretched beyond belief.
Just to add to that, Frank, after the 26 hours, they got a bed. Where was the bed? In the corridor. Not in the ward.
Do you know, I've been paying my taxes the whole way along, and I just hope that I don't take ill, because I hate to think what we're facing if we do take ill. And we're expecting an NHS that will look after us properly. And some people get looked after very well, I should emphasise. But if you're going in for 26 hours to sleep in the corridor, that isn't good.
Frank, that gentleman you had on earlier on said he would have to pay £180 for an initial consultation.
Mm-hmm.
It is highly likely that the surgeon that would have done the work is actually employed by the National Health Service and then goes out to work for the private health companies. Now, I've been following this for a lot of years, and people who work for the National Health Service then go out and do work for the private health companies, and according to the records I've got, they are six times more efficient than they are working for the National Health Service. That is a fact.
It is concerning, but we are short of the specialist staff, and we can't lay the blame at their door if they're able to make more money doing it the other way.
Yes, but should the contract that they have allow them to go out and allow people like me to have to wait for 122 hours or go down to Specsavers and spend £3,500 on getting audiology tests and equipment?
Mike, you ask some very relevant questions as someone who, when you went to work on your first day all those years ago, bought into a system that would provide you with free healthcare, and it is now letting us down hand over fist. And your angst is added to by the fact that we have politicians who do not take the likes of you seriously, Mike. Thanks for joining us.